Getting started with solo RPGs can be a really daunting task. There's so much information out there, and sifting through it can feel like a full-time job. And despite all of it that's out there, it can be very hard to figure out just where to start. Something straightforward that says, do this, then do that. Well, here's the thing. Before you play any solo RPGs, you need to figure out what game you're going to play. And there are different types of solo RPG games out there. Step one is picking the one that's best for you. I put together a little PDF that details different types of solo RPG games and also walks you through the pros and cons of each, so you can decide what you want out of your solo RPG journey. Do you just like running through dungeons, killing monsters, or journaling from your character's point of view? Or do you want an in-depth story and you're really excited to jump on both sides of the screen, being both the player and your own game master? This PDF details all those types of games and more, as well as concrete examples so you know what to buy next. You can get it by going to crumblingkeep.com/solo. That's crumblingkeep.com/solo. Let's get you playing with yourself. Hi, my name is James, and one of my biggest dreams in life is to have a kitchen like a halfling. I'm here to dork out about dungeons and design on Crumbling Keeps, the Dungeon Dork. Dice rolls are boring. Well, okay. Not all of them. But too many dice rolls for not good enough reason? They're boring, and they kinda suck. I believe I first started to get the inkling about this when I read Rise Up Camus' blog, and that's C-O-M-U-S, Rise Up Camus, Rise Up Camus. There's probably a French pronunciation that I'm absolutely slaughtering right now. But when I first read his blog about traps, which he gave a lot of credit to the Bastionland blog for the idea, but basically about telegraphing traps. And what I mean by that is if there is, say, a giant stone block that comes down out of the ceiling and smashes whatever's underneath it, dead. When the players come to that hallway that contains said block, there's pulverized bones on the floor. There's an inset into the ground in the shape of the stone above it. There's clues. But James, you might now be saying, if you do that, they're gonna know there's a trap. Where's the fun in that? Well, that's exactly the fun. If there's nothing to telegraph a trap, what's likely going... We kind of have two choices here. What's likely going to happen is the players are going to go down the hallway, the trap's gonna trigger, and they have to make a dex check to avoid it. That's nothing but button mashing. There's no imagination there. There's no input on the part of the player. But if they see clues that something is amiss, then that gets their brain spinning. That triggers their anxiety. And I know I talk about anxiety on this podcast a good bit, but it can be a good thing. That's why we tell stories as humans, to go through dangers and anxious situations that we don't want to go through in real life. So when they see those bones on the ground and that square inset in the stone, they're going to start poking around. They're going to look above it. They're going to throw things down the hallway. They now have a problem to solve, and not just a dice to roll. And the more I play RPGs, the less I want those dice being rolled. Because it's not just traps. Any situation that comes down solely to a dice roll is boring. There's not a good reason for it. It's just button mashing. If, for instance, there is a room in this dungeon and there is a clue in this room, and this clue is the only way to get out of the dungeon, and there's no way to find it other than making an appropriate perception check. Why? There's no player initiative there. If a situation or your game, a pass or fail, hinges on just a dice roll, what happens when that fail state comes about? What happens when the players can't get out of that dungeon just because they failed a dice roll? It doesn't get them anywhere. It frustrates them. It'll end up frustrating you as a game master. And ultimately, you're either going to make a decision on the fly and change it or ignore it, or you're going to, worse yet, do neither of those things, and everyone is just miserable. So here's the opposite of that. And that is making interesting decisions. Let's go back to that trap example, shall we? What the players are actually doing when they get to that hallway and they're seeing these things is now they have a bunch of information and they need to make interesting decisions about what to do about it. Whenever I make a new adventure for Marching Order, that's my solo kind of game book RPG game that I make, I really try and hold to that philosophy that the players and their characters are there to make interesting decisions. And even if something does come down to a dice roll, failure should give them information about what they missed, perhaps. If they fail that perception check or whatnot, well, that hallway looks completely safe, not dangerous at all. And if the players choose to metagame that, all the better. Let them poke with their poles. Let them figure it out. That's a lot more fun than just relying on the dice. See, this is one of the things that I personally feel that 5e gets wrong and also right. Because of the way 5e is set up with all the different skills and everything, a lot of times things come down to what button do I want to hit, which at least sometimes that's an interesting decision in and of itself. Like if a character asks, like if a player asks me, hey, can I make a check about the statue to see if I know anything? I won't tell them, sure, make a history check. I'll say, yes. What kind of check do you want to make? Because a history check will give different information than a religion check, which will give different information than an investigation check or a perception check. So at least that's something. They're choosing what avenue of information to pursue about this object. But ultimately, in 5e, there's a lot of buttons to mash. But then at the same time, if you look at folks, a lot of folks at least, their favorite part about the game, it's building their characters. It's choosing their archetype. It's choosing their spells and going through builds. And while some people, that is not what they enjoy about an RPG at all, and that is so valid, it does boil down to interesting decisions. If you're going for a specific build and you're choosing certain spells, there's all the things that you didn't choose to get there. And that's what makes that kind of neat. Let's look at combat for a sec, because that's a place where, generally, in most RPGs, There's a lot of dice rolls, and that's where they work because they create their own tension. You choose to attack, and then you make the dice roll. The information is already there. There's not a hidden whatnot that can only be accessible by a dice roll. So dice rolls do have their place, but no amount of dice that you roll is going to be cooler than making interesting decisions. All of these things are just tools to build tension. And knowing when to use what tool takes a lifetime of work. And I'm still working on that. I don't make the right call every time. But these guidelines, they help me. Telegraph your traps. Read RPG blogs. There's a lot of great information out there, and a lot of what I say is just a mix-up of everything that's came before me. Make interesting decisions. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you have any questions about anything I talked about here today or on any past episodes of Dungeon Dorks, go to crumblingkeep.com/question and ask away, or just check the link in the show notes. And here's this week's question.
This is Scott from Goblin Loot Minis, and as a fairly new player to solo RPGs, you are my first, giggle, giggle. I have a challenge with organizing my notes and random tables, things like that. Even though I am a GM for a D&D campaign with a couple of chaos monkeys, we pretty much play seat of our pants type of things. I do prep for things as a whole with things that I throw in where they make sense. I pretty much let them drive where they want to go, and then I just sort of have the things that I've already pre-planned and drop them in where it makes sense. But like random tables of things, that's where I kind of struggle when they ask me questions such as they are in a store or a laboratory. What are in all of those vials? What are those books? What are the titles of the books? That kind of thing. So over time, I've built up a bit of a.
But then we got cut off, but never fear, there's more.
Hey, James. So yeah, I guess where I was going with that was I built up a bit of a stack of things that I can use while I'm doing a D&D campaign. But as far as solo stuff, random tables for solo things, I've been gathering up like the stuff that I'm getting off of your emails and that kind of thing, and those are super awesome and super helpful. So I guess that's just kind of where I was going with that is, it just seems like I stumble along on where I'm going doing solo stuff. I don't know why. I guess maybe because I feed off the other people, and be able to bounce ideas off of them, and they throw out things, and then my ideas build on top of them, sort of pyramid or cascade down, whichever way you want to look at it. So I guess that's kind of where I was going with that. So anyway, again, I appreciate your time. I know you're busy with a bunch of stuff. So anyway, thanks again.
Well, Scott, there's a good number of things at play here. If we're talking about solely organization, well, that's going to fold in with some things I talk about in a bit. But something like a flow chart could help. But I don't think that's really the issue that we're looking at here. And I think you said it best. Your normal, finger quotes, normal mode of play is that you're DMing for a group and you have other people playing with you, feeding you ideas, and you get to bounce things off of. Honestly, it might sound weird, but sometimes I think coming to solo RPGing is tougher when you're coming to it with a GM's perspective. As a GM, we're used to providing the plot, the storyline, again with finger quotes there, while the players are used to finding it out as they go along. And I think, if you're never a DM, if you never run a game ever, I don't think you understand how much of that magic kind of tends to happen behind the screen, that you think, oh, this was all planned all along, or this was all random and it just happened this way. But there's a lot of things going on there. So I think, yeah, coming from a DM's perspective, like starting as a DM and going into solo role playing, can be difficult because while you are both the DM and the player in a lot of solo RPGs, there's a lot of tools that the DM has in a standard game that they don't get to bring with them into solo play. And one of those big tools is other players. So it's just you. There's no one else that's going to change the direction of the narrative other than yourself. And that's where things like oracles and random tables come into play. That's how a solo player tends to make up for these things. But obviously, there's some roadblocks there. Because I think the other thing that is maybe not as apparent, the big tool that the GM doesn't have when they're running themselves through a solo game is the GM screen. They don't have anything that's separating them from the meat and the guts of everything. It's splayed open, you get to see everything happening in real time, and it kind of gets hard to keep a mystery from yourself when you're doing that. Often, as a GM, I think we get used to weaving a plot of an adventure, and everything the other players do are ingredients that we get to stir together and make that. But when you're just playing with yourself, you don't have all those ingredients. And since you, in a sense, always know what's going to happen, and if you don't, it's based purely on randomness, it makes it a little more difficult to do for sure. And I think there's a few solutions here, or changes, mindset changes perhaps, that we could make that is helpful with that. One of them is that we can kind of stop expecting the experience we get in group play and solo games, because often it's just not what we're going to get. It's kind of like if you sit down to play a video game that's like a random dungeon generation that never ends, that you're running your character through forever, and maybe challenges get tougher and tougher, versus something that's like written out with a storyline and everything else. That first one is more like solo play, right? And that can be okay. I think there's some systems that are easier to mitigate that feeling than others. Like Ironsworn, I think, does a good job of when it sets up those milestones and it gives you ways to track progress among plots that come up during play through randomness, but then kind of solidifies them. I think other games like Blades in the Dark in that series as well, when the combat and the fiction aren't separate as a thing, and it almost feels like the dice rolls in those games are oracles in and of themselves. I feel like things like that can help as well. When you have, it's not just pass fail, it's, oh, I succeed just the way I wanted to. I succeed, but something else happens. So it gives you a lot of ideas to play with in terms of a plot that's emergent and happens through play with a single player, right? Dialing it back a bit, going back to just like the organization of notes and tables and everything else. I think another thing that happens is some of us that come to solo RPGs have been playing traditional RPGs for a really long time. We're good at them, you know? We have a lot of practice. We know how the pacing works. They make sense in our brains because of a lot of practice, right? And a big part of that is because we have developed those skills over a long period of time. So when we go into solo play and we expect it to be more of the same, it's not as easy in a lot of ways. A lot of those skills are not directly transferable. A kind of analogy from my own life over the past year is I recently started martial arts again. I've been going to a karate school, and I have not taken karate since, well, it's been a while. It's been a few decades, right? I've taken some other things in between here or there, but it's been a while since I've taken karate. I thought that I would pretty much know a lot of the things going on, and a lot of my old skills would be transferable, and a lot of them have been. And it's been really cool to see what kind of knowledge is still stored in my body. But I'm finding out there's a lot that isn't, things that are done differently. And these two things that feel like they should be really similar utilize different skill sets or the same skill sets in different ways. So I still have to struggle through a lot of things to learn it, right? So I think part of it is too, is just realizing that your solo RPG experiences, especially early on, are not going to be as satisfying as the group play experiences you've been doing for a long time. Because frankly, you're just not as good at them. And I don't mean just you, I mean everyone. And I certainly mean me. And if I'm being honest, largely, I'm not interested in expending as much effort to get good at that, which I know might sound really surprising. And I'll explain more about that in a sec, and just in terms of different solo RPGs. But yeah, practice certainly makes you get better. And another way to think about it, as far as organizing tables is whatnot, is, you know, if we look at D&D 5e, that familiar experience that most of us know about. You make a first level character, you don't have that many powers, right? You get new powers every single time you level up. Some classes more than others. Might be a bevy of new spells, might be new rogue abilities, whatever. There's so many abilities out there. And I've ran into this thing often in my like professional dungeon mastering job that folks want to do a one shot of like, hey, let's do 20th level characters. It'll be really fun. But a thing they don't contend with before they start that is that a 20th level character is going to have a lot more skills than a first, and you don't get that kind of gradual buildup and a time to get used to the skills you have before moving on to the new ones. You just have everything all at once, and you don't quite know how they all fit together or what to do with it. And largely, that's kind of how I feel about like random tables and whatnot, and all of the tools out there to play solo RPGs, mine certainly included. I make some really oddly niche things, you know? Which, thank you for all the compliments, by the way. And if anyone wants to get on that email list, you can get signed up by going to crumblingkeep.com/solo. But anyway, I digress. Starting with the smallest amount of material possible and working up is a great way to go. Start with just a simple oracle or something like that, and use that until you feel comfy with it. And know that the games aren't going to be as satisfying or as widespread as maybe they could be if you had like all the tables and everything going all at once, right? You have to look at it a little bit like skill building. You're practicing those first level skills, i.e., your small collection of tools you plan on using, until they feel second nature, until you're like, yes, I know how this fits in to my game in particular. And that's a big thing. You're almost expected to do more hacking of things as a solo gamer than other games because you need to figure out how to make it work for you. And that's so very individualistic. But once you get those under control, you can look around and add other things. And I would go with more general things at first, like broader use things, like a broad use oracle, as opposed to a table that specifically tells you who's in a town or who's in a bar or something like that. I will make an exception to that. The sandbox toolkit, at least I think that's what it's called. Don't quote me on that. I'll try and find something for the show notes to direct people there. It's a vast collection of random tables to figure out who's in a town, who do you run into on the road, what do dungeons look like, et cetera, et cetera. There is a lot of stuff in there. It is pretty cool. I do think it's more suited for old school D&D play, just thematically, but I mean, I'd try it with anything just to find out. But it also has a system inside of it that tells you when to use what. It has starts with like the kind of the broad strokes of overland travel, etc. And as you get somewhere, it will tell you like, okay, now roll on this table. Now roll on this table. And it can feel maybe a little overwhelming, but you can get really granular with it while starting from a broad place. And two things I want to say about that is one, it is going to be random, right? It's up to you to connect the dots if you even want to. That feeling of randomness can also be fun. I mean, you go from one town to a next anywhere you live, there's a chance it's going to be different with no real plot, rhyme, or reason, unless they're football rivals or something like that, I guess. And the other part of it is maybe you don't want to get that granular. Maybe you just want to keep playing, and rolling on all these tables is actually what's clogging it up. And again, that's individualistic to each and every person, but especially in the realm of solo RPGs, everything is optional. And that's any rule in the book, any table you come across, you can use it one time and not use it the next if it doesn't feel right. And, there's no right or wrong way. You're not finger quotes cheating or anything like that unless you feel you are. It's all up to you, which is good and bad because it can be very overwhelming to figure all that out, especially when starting, which goes back to that building of skills thing. So all that said, to go back to what I said a little bit earlier about these are skills that I myself am not actively trying to develop. You know what I like? Solo games that do all that work for me, honestly. That's why I created Marching Order, because that's what I wanted. Something to take me through an adventure, and I just get to make some choices along the way. Now, a lot of these games are not as open as a traditional RPG that you're trying to play solo. You can't just go anywhere and do everything. It is more limiting, for sure, but it's a trade-off. And I think games like that sometimes get a bad rap because people think they have to play in these huge open world traditional RPGs that are only limited by their imagination. And I'm just like, please limit me a little bit more. Games like 12 Years, Four Against the Darkness, Delve, these are games that I love because they have borders. They tell me what to do and when to do it. And either I am following a preset story or the systems are tight enough that one emerges or it doesn't as it goes. Even solo minis games are getting very RPG-ish as of late. Playing through a campaign of, not Morkborg, I'm sorry, Forbidden Psalms, which is based on Morkborg. It can feel very RPG-ish, just with a heavy emphasis on the combat and things like that. And you control a party of characters and you take them through scenarios. And it's a lot of fun. Like, no, if you choose not to go into the crypt, that's not an option you can make. The scenario is in a crypt. But you get to have that play. And again, this isn't for everybody as well, but this is kind of my solo world. And the type of solo RPGs and games that I like are the ones that, while more limiting, will do it for me. And I think a lot of us as solo RPG players don't ask ourselves if that's the option we want. And maybe it's not, but I think it's a question worth asking. Well, Scott, I've blabbed for a while here. I hope that was really helpful. And folks, if you have any other questions, just go to crumblingkeep.com/question and give me a little recording. And I might put it on the air.